The six-figure debt to six-figure net worth investing course is now live. You can go to studentloanplannercourse.com and you can sign up now through January the 14th. And if you wait beyond that, then you're going to have to wait 6 months until the next opportunity to sign up. So if you have a goal in 2020 of growing your net worth and not having your student loans rule your life, go ahead and sign up for this course. There is a 7-day money-back guarantee, no questions asked. So if you sign up for it and you don't think it's what you were looking for, send us an email, help@studentloanplanner.com, and ask for a refund. And we've only had 2% of people ever do that, and we've sold hundreds and hundreds of these investing courses. So sign up for this, and today we're going to talk in the episode about this course. I'm going to give you a little bit of a preview about what you would learn in each section so that you can get an idea. If you're too broke to afford it, you can learn a little bit of this stuff. And if you can't afford it, then I want to talk about some of these concepts because they're really life-changing concepts present in this course. First, we talk about why is investing important? I mean, at the end of the day, I want to think about investing probably as little as possible, right? I mean, I have other things that I'd rather be doing, like spending time with friends or family, going on vacation, relaxing, sitting on a beach, whatever you like to do, you probably can think of a lot more fun things than reading books on investing. In fact, like one of the things that people like to make fun of me about is when I do read personal finance books for fun, people think I'm like a weirdo or something. It is a little bit weird, right? And so here's why investing is important. It's because that whenever you make a trade-off of something like monetarily, you're trading your time for that thing. Right. So, for example, let's say that you go buy a $20,000 car, and let's say you make $120,000 a year, and after taxes, you take home $80,000. So, that car is not $20,000. That car is 25% of your annual earnings. Actually, if you translate that to what that really means, that car is 3 months out of the year that you went into your job and didn't spend time doing other things you might have rather done. That's a really important concept because what investing does is it gives you income long term. It gives you assets that you can spend down and replace your regular day job income with investing income. And that means that you don't have to work unless you want to. And so when you trade things like 3 months of your life for a car, you could have traded 2 weeks of your life for a car that probably would have been almost as good. And that 2.5 months extra that you netted that you got to keep, you can utilize towards doing other things in your life that make you feel more fulfilled and excited and happy. That's why investing is important, is if you do it right, it can shave 10 or 20 years off of the length of your required working career, and it can give you financial security for your family where you can live whatever life that you want to live. Now, we also go into next in the section two, we talk about different kinds of investments. So there's all kinds of different investments out there, and some of them are really complicated and some of them are a little bit more straightforward. So the building blocks of most investments ever really are two things, equity and debt. So equity is basically an ownership share in something, right? It's a percentage of the profits that you're entitled to. And if the business ever sells, you would get a pro rata portion of the value that it sold for. So equity is simply ownership. That's what equity is. That's one kind of investment. And stocks are just a version of a thing that you can put your money in that represents an ownership in a company. So for example, you know, 100 shares of Coca-Cola represents a proportional ownership of Coca-Cola's profits. That's what it represents. Now, you can also have something called debt. If you basically have money that you loan, then you have a bond. So there's different examples of this. Stocks and bonds are basically equity and debt. When you have debt, you're investing because you want to get your money back and you want to get the interest that you expect on the money that you lent. So it's a different analysis, and there's different reasons that you would use investments like that. Stocks, you're looking for growth, or you're looking for income, and you're looking for more risk, honestly, because that means you have the more potential to make higher returns. And the best way to invest in stocks and bonds is not directly owning them because of how complicated it can be and how confusing and how many bad decisions you can often make when you own individual investments. That's why things like funds were invented. So there's two kinds of funds. There's mutual funds and there's ETFs. Mutual funds basically pool different stocks or bonds into a big thing that you can put your money into, and those trade once a day at the end of the day. Whereas ETFs, exchange-traded funds, are a relatively recent invention. They trade throughout the day. They have some other differences that I'm not going to get into on today's show, but you can figure out which one you feel more comfortable with, and then that can be a good place to put your money long-term. Now, there's other kinds of investments too. You might have heard of hedge funds, private equity, cryptocurrency, crowdfunding, all kinds of different alternative investments is another one. So here's the test. Why is this opportunity available to you? If it's available to you because this is something that's too good to be true or you can't miss out on it, well, if it's really an attractive investment opportunity, then it would be offered first to the people with the most money and the most connections. So any kind of private investment deal, unless it's very small, unless it's just something that's, you know, like a large investor would probably not even pay attention to it because it's not going to move the dial enough, then there's a good chance that this is just designed to basically enrich someone else. So we show you different ways of how to identify investments that you should avoid, because a lot of times being a successful investor is just as much about picking the right thing as it is just avoiding the things that you shouldn't be putting your money into. Now, it's all well and good to understand why investing is important. Doing it well can result in you having more time in your life to do other things. And then it's also important, obviously, if you know that you need to invest, once you know what kind of investments there are, now you need to know how much money you could make and how much you could lose, right? Because that's really key in investing, is right now we've had an economy that has done nothing but go up. Everything in our economy has soared in value the past 10 years. We haven't really had a significant negative event in the stock market in the past decade. This is like the longest period without a recession going back to like 1850 something. So clearly right now there's a elevated risk of loss in the stock market and the bond market, probably because of how much the bond market has also gone up in value. So everything has gone up in value and everybody feels like there's not a lot of risk right now. And that's a wonderful time to talk about how much money you can make and lose when you invest. So there are different steps that we suggest to be able to handle the risk of losing money. The one thing I can guarantee you is when you do invest your money, especially in stocks and bonds and mutual funds, you will lose at some point at least probably 30 or 40% of your money on paper. And the thing is that has some very significant psychological consequences on a lot of people. It causes some people to panic. I had friends that worked during the 2009 recession at one of the largest mutual fund companies in the world, and they would have conversations with me about how during that time they had 2 or 3 hour conversations on the phone trying to talk somebody off of the ledge from selling everything they've ever had because they just can't handle watching their accounts go down anymore. Those people that did that lost out on their investments tripling in the next 10 years. And usually what happens is these people will panic and you'll sell, and then suddenly you'll try to get back in, but you never know when the right time to get back in is. And so you wait for the drop that never comes. And then you finally get back involved when the market has really soared, and then the market crashes again. And then those same psychological issues come back and cause you to freak out again. And then you sell and the market cycle repeats itself. So this is really one reason why so many investors are so poor at growing their wealth long term. It's because of behavioral problems and a lack of awareness of the risks. So when you know what the risks are, you know exactly what to expect. A lot of times when I'm talking about student loan plans, you know, people are so terrified about the future of what student loan policy could be, and they're worried about how this would impact them. And it really comes down to talking about all the potential upsides and downsides. And once we've really defined all of those, and once we've discussed the impact on your life from each one of those different things that could happen, then suddenly it's not that worrisome anymore because you know what to expect. So that's really important to know how much money you're going to lose at times, probably. And then also how much money you can make and why those two things are so important so that you can stay invested, so you can stay confident in your plan, and so you keep putting money into this, and so that you understand how everything works and how something like making investments work for you and replacing your income with income from basically becoming a capitalist, really, is what it is, and putting your money that you either got from other investments or through your labor is the most common way. You're putting that money that you earn from your labor into things that you hope will generate a positive return and can potentially replace your reliance on labor for income to live. That's kind of the goal behind this. We talk about the different risk profiles of different kinds of combinations of investments. So we look at what happens if you put all your money on stocks. We look at what happens if you put all your money in bonds. And then we show you what kind of mix that you could do and what kind of impact that that would have on the risk of loss that you would have. Now, the next section four is basically we discuss what investment funds that you should pick. So all the time people are asking me, what do I invest in, Travis? Like, what do I put my money in? I get that. Like, but tell me what I should put everything in. And here's the thing. I will say that all investments are subject to loss. And by law, I think I have to tell you that you need to consult a licensed financial professional to make that decision. That said, I cannot give you advice one-on-one without being a licensed financial advisor, which, to be honest, makes life really annoying and it's really expensive. You have to basically listen to regulators and what you can and can't say, and you have to do all kinds of compliance. And there's good reasons for that, because obviously there's a lot of hucksters and fraudulent actors out there that are trying to take your money, right? And so that's the reason for a lot of this regulation. But it's really made, I guess, in my opinion, giving financial advice kind of an unpleasant thing for a lot of people. I mean, I think a lot of financial advisors, if they had unlimited finances themselves, might choose to get out of the profession just because it's a little bit like medicine, I feel like, in the sense of it's not as maybe fun because of just how much regulations involved. It just makes it so that you can't deliver a low cost financial plan for a few hundred dollars. It just makes the math very difficult when you have to pay $10,000 for a state to regulate you. It's kind of hard to turn around and charge a few hundred dollars for a plan, right? So the way I've worked around this is a educational course that's mass distributed to the audience. That doesn't mean that the quality is not as high. And what it means is that that's a loophole that we can use. And this is an educational course, meaning that we're able to give you specific recommendations of what we think, what investment funds that you should consider using. It's kind of like a newsletter subscription. Back in the day, people would subscribe to regular newsletters that would come to their house and would recommend specific stocks or specific trades to make. And it's kind of like that. There's an exemption for educational materials that allow us to, in this one area, give you investment suggestions. We go into what funds to use and what percentages. And we talk about how much financial advisors cost. What is the impact on using one to your long-term returns? And when do you need to use one? And when can you avoid using one? And if you do use one, what is a fair price to pay? And if you do not use one, what is the risk that you're taking on by trying to manage this yourself? So we really teach you how to make your own investments is what section four is all about. The next section we go into in section five, we discuss how to make your investments and your loans work together. So one thing that I've found is very, very few financial professionals, even ones that are really, really good, understand student loans and putting investments on the same strategy. It's basically, so in other words, putting those loans and those investments together under the same umbrella to make a plan is a very difficult thing to do. You really do have to understand the loan rules and the loan math to make a good investment plan for someone. Most investment managers really get paid for managing your investments, and the financial planning a lot of times is given away because they're charging you 1% a year to manage your investments and they just kind of throw it in. Right. But a lot of times what that results in is just a plan that's not right. Because think about this, if you want to work part time and you have 400,000 of student loans, but you also want to retire one day, a financial planner might look at you and just think that it's a good advice to give you basically, okay, well, you need to work more. You need to put your loans in a 30-year plan and just pay them off. And then also invest with me and put money with me. Right. Like that's the plan. But it's actually kind of a bad plan because instead you could be putting 10% on your loans with an income-driven plan and reduce your taxable income to get that effective rate even lower. And then you could put aside, you know, $400 or $500 a month into a mutual fund account to grow into what you need to pay your tax bomb with. So if you understand that, then you also understand that you could put extra money aside into your same tax bomb account so that you could retire before the age of 60. So your tax bomb happens, your loans are gone. Now, let's say that you're at the level of assets that you needed to be at. And so you'll hit your target net worth that we would help you calculate with this course. We help you figure out what net worth you actually need to stop working and how that impacts the loans that you have in terms of what you need to do with both. And then you get to the point where you have the net worth that you need and then you can stop working, right? So what that traditional financial planning approach is going to do is it's going to add several years to your working career because they don't understand loans. Basically, no financial planners really, probably 0.1% of them. And those are the people that are actually fiduciaries. Probably 0.1% of financial planners really understand student loans. Obviously, there's a lot of financial planners that would understand investing even better than we do because we don't do that professionally day in and day out. That said, I am a chartered financial analyst. I did manage billions of dollars of bonds and traded for those accounts. And I know a thing or two about investing, right? And so I want to put that knowledge to work and helping you. And this is essentially how I'm able to do that through this kind of regulatory loophole of offering a course instead of having some sort of investment consult that we would offer. So we show you why that savings rate actually matters and what it needs to be. We'll translate, okay, this much allows you to have this lifestyle. This much allows you to have this lifestyle. And this much allows you to retire at 35 and own a mansion in the Pacific coast of Mexico and rent out your villa to a bunch of Australian and American expats while you just read Hemingway novels all day. I don't know. I tried to come up with the most crazy sounding thing I could there. We also go into tax bomb account and side fund, PSLF side fund investing. So that's an important concept. And again, for regulatory reasons, we can't really get into the nitty gritty during our student loan planning, but we're able to go into detail about how to manage that money. It's really basically investing according to a specific life cycle path. You can think of it as a glide path investment strategy. Really what you're doing when you do a side account or a tax bomb account is you're managing according to a liability. And the liability is that you might have to use that money for the PSLF situation. You might have to use all of it at once to pay off your loans if PSLF doesn't happen. So that means you probably would manage that a little bit more conservatively if you were managing it specifically for that purpose. For the tax bomb account, you're probably managing it for the 20-year period. And so that's a similar strategy to managing savings for college, really. You start off really aggressive with a high percentage in stocks, and then you gradually decrease your stock percentage to make more room for bonds to have less risk for loss so that when you pull that money out, you're okay, right? You're not going to lose a ton of it right before you need it. And then we also get into the discussion, which is a kind of a really detailed discussion of, do you refinance your student loans or do you invest? And the answer to that one is kind of an interesting one because it really shows you that both paths are okay. Both paths, throwing all of your money at your loans, throwing all your money at your investments, both of them can work out. But a lot of people with refinancing, they just make a lot of mistakes and they let the loan kind of linger for a really long time and maybe they don't invest the money. So we show you what people, what the math says and then what people do actually in practice. And then we make a recommendation for what you should do if that applies to you. The final section, section six of this course, is we discuss the action plan of what you need to do. So for example, it's fine to know what funds to invest in. It's fine to know that you need to put $1,000 a month in VTSAX with this brokerage account, and you need to contribute $1,500 a month into your 401k at your work, and you need to use the target date retirement fund that charges you 90% less than the other mutual funds in your account, right? So you save more money, you have more money, but why do you need more money? Again, that's a great question to ask. There's a great book called Enough by the founder of Vanguard, John Bogle, where he talks about how he structured the company in such a way that caused him to be worth $50 million instead of $50 billion. Basically, he let Vanguard be owned by the mutual fund shareholders instead of himself, and he gave away, literally made himself 1,000 times less rich. So what's the difference between having $50 million and $50 billion? Well, you know, you're probably naming a bunch of colleges and foundations after yourself at $50 billion, and you're probably just naming one small college after yourself at $50 million. I don't know. The point being is that both of them achieved what he was looking for in life. So that means that you need a target net worth that you're happy at. And the problem is a lot of people, their target net worth is always twice what they're currently at. So you really have to be careful of that because you can fall into a deadly trap. So the purpose of knowing all this stuff about investments, once you finally learn all about them, is you can use them to literally say, I'm going to have work be optional on January the 1st, 2030. You can target it with that level of precision because you can figure out how long it's going to take you to get to a specific amount of net worth based off of your savings rate and income trajectory and what rate of return you're expecting based off of how much risk you're willing to take. So once we explain that to you, then you'll be able to translate that into, this is the date that work will be optional for me. You know, so you figure that out. And then that's really motivational fire. It's fuel for that motivational fire because then you know, okay, well, if I put in an extra $2,000 a month into my investments, into these mutual funds, then I know I'm going to get there 1 year faster, right? Or 2 years faster, 3 years faster, whatever it is. So now instead of 2030 being the date that I've got circled, now it's 2027. And we even also discuss strategies kind of like stopping that pursuit completely and doing a different path, kind of like I did, where you get to a percentage of the target net worth that you have, and then you stop working because you feel like you have a different calling in your life at that time, right? So for me personally, I stopped working when I was at about 50% of my net worth target that I set for myself back in, you know, the mid-2010s. And I traveled around the world and did a bunch of things that I knew that I would not get to do when I was older, like, you know, seeing 40 countries in a year. That was one of the best decisions I ever made. The reason is because I didn't wait around to hit my target net worth at my current job. I decided to stop that because I had a substantial amount of savings I didn't have to use to live. And so that bought me a lot of time to enjoy life and figure it out. And then lo and behold, I was good at Excel from being a bond trader. I got the ultimatum from my in-laws that they wanted me to have an income, and I was already doing a little bit of student loan consulting for fun. And then student loan planner became the result. And now the target net worth has probably been surpassed, right, from what I had set prior. And I didn't do it with that intentional focused path of working for 10 years, having a targeted savings rate and following all the rules. So you can follow those rules, or you can kind of try to take a different path. And we kind of show you how investments empower you. That's the goal, is that, you know, at some point your back could have pain in it and you might not be able to do as many procedures, right? Your hands could have arthritis. Maybe you can't do extractions anymore if you're a dentist. Maybe at some point, the electronic medical records just piss you off and you just can't handle it anymore. Maybe your firm that you're working at wants you to defend a case that you just really don't want to. Maybe the whole profession that you're in just falls apart. Like, heaven forbid that happens to pharmacy, but it could, right? And if that happens, you need to have financial assets and you need to have investments and you need to understand business and personal finance so that you have the freedom to do whatever you want. So we go into showing you rules to how to maximize your retirement accounts without having to think a lot. We show you how to open up accounts to start your non-retirement investment accounts where you don't have to think on that either. And then we also show you the easy way to set up automated transfers that basically pull from your bank account that sweep into the right funds so that you have everything growing without having to have a lot of work. So this really is probably a 3-hour investment of your time, plus the cost of the course, which is $399. And then that gets you potentially avoiding hundreds of thousands of dollars of mistakes investing. And it also gets you not having to work quite as hard, saving as much money, because you can have your money do the lifting for you by getting long-term better returns than you would otherwise have gotten. And then we put it all together for you so that you write out and commit to your plan so you know exactly what to do with your debt. And what that reason we call it six-figure debt to six-figure net worth is, why don't we call it that specifically? So most of our clients, about 70% of you, have $100,000 or more of student loan debt. So the majority of you listening owe that amount. This system would work for somebody that owes $70,000, don't get me wrong, but that's what we named it, six-figure debt. Why do we call it 2 six-figure net worth? Why not 7-figure net worth? That sounds better, right? It's because that going from negative 100,000 or negative 200,000 or whatever that is to positive 100,000 of net worth, no matter how much debt you have, that's possible for pretty much all of you listening within 5 to 10 years. So really, if you're going to set a 20-year goal, that's really way too long of a goal. It's a lot better idea to have short, medium, and long-term goals. So this is really I would call it the short, medium goal. This is achievable by a lot of you a lot faster than you ever dreamed possible. It doesn't happen though, because you get tricked when you're watching football to buy the Ram truck with a lease. You get tricked to buy the nice car that you think that you need because your $2,000 car died and you go out and you spend $35,000 with financing at the dealership, right? So those kind of things happen and you're not aware of the alternatives. And then that money doesn't get spent on growing your wealth, and then you're just sort of stuck, and then maybe you're not having as much satisfaction in life as you otherwise would. Now, one piece of feedback that we got for the last course was that we didn't go enough into real estate investing for a lot of people's tastes. Because obviously you can invest in mutual funds, ETFs, stocks, bonds, all those things. And that can give you positive returns, right? Like the past 10 years, stocks have done incredibly well. So you would have, like I looked at it the other day, if you put $10,000 in the S&P 500 10 years ago, you would have had like $32,000, I think, today, something in the 30,000s. You would have more than tripled your money. So obviously, who doesn't love to triple your money, right? Now, the thing is investments can also flatline and not do that. Like you can also have that 10,000 basically stay almost the same as it was when you started. There's a lot of things that you need to be aware of and how to invest so that you don't lose tons of money. For example, if you put $10,000 in 1999 and you looked at what it was 10 years after that, you know, you could be looking at the same amount of money or even less, right? So that's because you invested at the height of the tech bubble and then you cashed out at the bottom of the crash in 2008, 2009. And if you have a diversified portfolio, you actually would have still made a lot of money over that entire time frame. And that's kind of what this course is designed to show you. But let's say that you want to augment that, or let's say that you want to do a lot of real estate investing on top of that. So we interview three different experts. This is a bonus section. So this is outside of the main course. This is something that I don't expect all of you to care about. But some of you are going to say, yeah, I want to own a lot of real estate. Yeah, I think owning 20 properties and making $200,000 a year of passive income sounds amazing. So that's what this bonus section is designed to address. What I did is I interviewed three real estate experts that use different strategies with their investing that have all achieved a substantial level of financial independence through their style of real estate investing. So the first couple that I interview is a dual physician couple. And we basically go through how they've paid 0% in taxes on over $300,000 of income over the past 5 years, specifically with this loophole in real estate. It's called professional real estate investor status, and they use it to write off a lot of their active income from their part-time jobs as physicians. And it's really kind of stunning because this couple lives in California, and so California has got a reputation for having very high taxes. And they used real estate to write off all of their taxable income, which can have some really cool impacts for people that are pursuing loan forgiveness. You know, you can obviously write your income down to zero and pay zero a month and have that qualify for forgiveness for 20 years. So there's a lot of information in that that I think will appeal to a lot of people. Then the second part of that bonus section, we go into passive real estate investing. So, you know, you can buy all kinds of different investments as a high income professional. And a lot of you do have that six figure income that could qualify you for private deals. And when you get approached with private deals, you'll have to do your due diligence. You'll have to understand like what exactly you're being offered. And so we kind of talk a little bit about that and who should use. This is really passive investing in real estate. So you're basically buying a fund, you're buying a deal, you're participating in owning a portion of an apartment complex, and you might have to lock your money up for 5 or 10 years to do that. So we get into who should consider passive real estate investing, how you think about it in terms of what kind of amount of money would you want to put in compared to your overall investments. And we just kind of discuss the different pros and cons behind that. And then the third part of that bonus section I'm real excited about is how to use real estate specifically to achieve financial independence. So we talk about tips like house hacking. So basically when you buy a house and you rent out the other rooms, or if you buy basically a 2, 3, or 4-plex, which is basically a 2, 3, or 4-unit building, you can get a residential loan for that and you can live in one of the units and rent out the other three and have those units cover your mortgage. So there's a lot of people that use this as a gateway drug to real estate investing. And then on top of that, there's the rental debt snowball, which is an idea from the interview that I do with Chad Carson. So he runs a large website and it has a large real estate empire. And what he has done to build a portfolio of 100 properties is he has targeted paying down one loan at a time from the free cash flow for multiple buildings. And that has gotten him exponentially faster at getting rid of all of his mortgage debt so that he can have as much income as possible so that his family can enjoy a lifestyle like no other. And he's still a fairly frugal guy. I'm just saying that he could enjoy, if he wanted to, he could go to Switzerland and go skiing every day if he really wanted to. But instead, he traveled to South America and lived with his family for 2 years while they learned Spanish and hiked and just enjoyed this amazing lifestyle while also managing remotely a portfolio of 100 properties that he owned directly. So this is going to be a really fascinating interview for those of you who are interested in real estate investing. And then the last bonus piece that we have, we get into different stories about investing, kind of illustrating the importance of it in different ways. We look at compounding, how that affects things. We look at backup plans to loan forgiveness strategies that you could use investing for. We look at how to invest in businesses, basically what kind of mistakes are most common in investing. And then we discuss, as boring as it is, we put this in the bonus section just in case people don't want to look at it, but we talk about budgeting and how a very simple budgeting rule that doesn't even have to involve budgeting can allow you to probably save an extra 10 to 20% of your income that'll get you to the point of financial freedom probably 5 years sooner. And I know that people, in addition, they like to have all these little things, like little loopholes. So we get into like a little bit of tax loss harvesting, which is where you can write off $3,000 of your clinical income every year if you have losses that you can show from your investments, which in some cases can be manufactured. So for example, a physician in California with the 50% tax rate could use that loophole to save $1,500 on their income tax. That's basically almost four times what the cost of the course is. And that's just one idea from this course, right? And when you're doing advanced strategies, advanced tax strategies with your investments, you need to know the very easiest path to do it so it's not stressful. So we give you examples of what funds that you would use to switch between to generate these losses, to have write-offs for your income. So this is really a course that I'm extremely proud of. We have a ton of people that have signed up for it in the past. The last time we opened it, the first time we opened it 6 months ago, we had over 450 students sign up, and we had, I think, 8 refunds. So that's why I said there's a no questions asked 7-day refund policy after you buy it. If it's not what you thought it was going to be, if you don't feel like you're really learning anything, yes, shoot, send me an email and we'll give you a refund. It doesn't matter to me. I mean, honestly, I want you to take this course because it's going to change your life. Because, you know, you're either going to save hundreds of thousands of dollars in mistakes you probably would have made, or you're going to be aware enough that you can truly hire a professional that's good, that will cost, you know, maybe $3,000 to $5,000 a year instead of your typical financial person that wants a percentage of your portfolio and it's going to charge you maybe 20 grand a year. That's the difference. And so is it worth 3 hours of your time and $3.99? Is it worth that to learn this material in 2020 to take control of your financial future, or is it not? So I would seriously suggest that you take advantage of this today. If you want to do that, go to studentloanplannercourse.com and sign up, and I can promise you that you won't regret it. And if the extremely rare chance that you do, you can get your money back. So you're either going to save a multiple of what you spend, a huge amount more than what you spend, or you're going to be able to get your money back. So it's really a win-win situation. So I wanted to just cover all these things because there's so much more than what we were able to get into today that it's actually present in that six-figure debt to six-figure net worth investing course. Go check it out, take the risk, and commit the time. Because if you do, you're going to get one of the best returns in your investment all year. You're going to learn how to invest and how to have your investments replace your income from your day job to give you financial freedom and freedom over your time, which is the best asset of all.